Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast.
There's only one conference. I don't recognize the NFC.
I mean, he kind of touched on everything I'm hoping to happen.
I should just edit it out, but I won't.
Feels good, but it doesn't feel right.
You know, that particular move, everyone in the organization is still behind.
After listening to all the NFL division previews, here are the postseason predictions now.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the Next Fan Up off-season, before the preseason, postseason prediction preview episode. I am Pod Vader, threw in another P just for you, talking about our postseason predictions. But before we even get to those, there's a few news and notes that we will talk about. And I am joined by our Superfan Leadership Council, minus one. And let me introduce you to those superfans. These are the guys that you will most likely hear the most from over the course of time if you're a new listener to the Next Fan Up podcast. And I bring in our good friend from Scotland, who is our Redskins superfan, Neil. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay. Hey, guys. Congratulations. I hope you enjoyed your celebrations. 241 years and all those people who sacrificed their lives to get Donald Trump as president. Congratulations.
See, that's not even right. Don't you have a Brexit or something that you have to be worried about?
I had breakfast this morning and it was really nice.
Our webmaster in training is our Pittsburgh Steelers superfan, Greg. Hello, Greg.
Hello. Hope you guys are all excited for the Revis watch that we're going to have here. Hail to Pitt.
The man with the sultry tones and the guy who probably should be the permanent host of this show, Nick, is our chief superfan. Hello, Nick.
Hello, and how are you gentlemen doing?
See, I mean, even when you're on the phone, your voice sounds better than all of ours put together. That guy, who is Nick's nemesis in the same division, it is Monty, our Raiders superfan.
Doing great, fellas. I still have all 10 digits after the fireworks display, but this bright burning globe in the sky is hurting my eyes. I'm not used to podcasting this early.
Speaking of early, the only other member of the Leadership Council not with us is Justin, our Seahawks superfan and Sunday host, the guy who helps put together that show that you have first thing Monday mornings during the regular season. And that's why we're here today, because we're starting to get into preseason form. But before we get into preseason form, we're going to do my postseason predictions. As you've heard during our entire month of division previews, I presented my win-loss records based on a game-by-game prediction. I literally went through the entire schedule, predicted the winner and the loser of every single game of the season. And now I have my postseason predictions to share. But before we even get to that, there was news that occurred over the past month that affected different teams. And I believe we'll start with you, Nick, because yours is probably the biggest, most impactful news. I believe Neil mentioned that it was catastrophic internal strife with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, it certainly is baffling at the very least, and definitely not good for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, a couple of weeks ago, I found myself on Twitter, as I often do, probably too often, and saw that the Chiefs did extend head coach Andy Reid, and it was great. I was like, this is fantastic. You know, and like many other Chiefs fans, I was tweeting, this is great. We just got to lock up John Dorsey, dynasty, et cetera, et cetera. 26 minutes later, the Kansas City Chiefs announced that they have fired John Dorsey. So, as you can imagine, not only was this not signaled at all, I mean, basically all of the Chiefs fan base assumed that both Reed and Dorsey were going to be extended at the same time, and that this front office, which has been so successful the last 4 years, is going to stay together for a long period of time. And that's exactly, and so no one really understands what has gone down. And the thing is, I think probably John Dorsey is not a household name
lot of places around the country, but he's basically been as good of a general manager as anybody over the last 4 years. I saw somewhere he's actually drafted the most Pro Bowlers and all pros over the last 4 years. I mean, he's responsible for bringing in, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones this year, Marcus Peters, Tyreek Hill, all sorts of guys. And actually, you know, a lot of what he's done to build this roster is the kind of the guys that no one, you know, outside of Chiefs fans will really know. But this is a really deep team. He's great at the bottom roster churn. And again, I mean, I just think you'd be hard pressed to make a case that he's not top five. And so to push him out so suddenly is just bizarre, because there's no way that it can be for performance. But I think the only explanation really comes into some of the other weird moves we've seen this offseason and his handling of it, because basically,
oh, you mean like trading up in the first round to get a crappy backup quarterback that you believe is the future of your franchise?
No, that particular move, everyone in the organization is still behind. I mean, all the other moves, which is basically, you know, cutting Jamaal Charles. I still think he has nothing left, but the fact that they didn't even try to give him renegotiate his deal and get him at a smaller level, like the deal that he ended up signing with the Denver Broncos, the fact that they cut Jeremy Maclin very unceremoniously without also trying to negotiate his deal at all. I mean, he ended up signing for the Baltimore Ravens for half as much as he was going to be paid in Kansas City, and coming off an injury riddled season and things like that. I mean, it's likely they could have gotten him down to that point where he was no longer a problem for the cap. And yet not only was he was cut without the opportunity for renegotiation, and he was cut by voicemail. And it's obviously, this is a guy that head coach Andy Reid is very fond of as well. And so, you know, the Chiefs are not a very leaky organization generally. You don't really see a lot of the vendettas playing themselves out in you know, beat writer columns and things like that. But we have seen now some reports over the last couple of weeks of, you know, basically, quote unquote, you know, team sources explaining why this happened. And they pointed to a handful of those sort of contracts over the last few years. But really what it comes down to, I think, is just that Dorsey is a scout. He's not a very good manager of people. And he had been clashing personally with people. But, you know, because none of the other explanations really make any sense. And I do think Maclin had a big part to play in this. And if you just look at the timing, it almost has to have been Macklin's, summary firing as being a major part of it. Because if they thought that they were potentially going to move on from John Dorsey, they would not have let Chris Ballard go, who had been waiting in the wings, and everybody had said it was going to be the guy who takes over the team. There's been a long time we've been sort of expecting Dorsey to move on to a Green Bay job anyway. But so you let your number two go, and the guy who's supposed to inherit the GM job, and then you just fire the GM. And also they fired their capologist and one other front office guy in the last couple of months. And so it doesn't make any sense for them to do this stuff in this order. This seems like something where they decided for sure they were going to can John Dorsey just in the last few months. And the fact that he was canned on the same day that Andy Reid got his extension, it's kind of hard to believe that those two are totally unrelated. While most of the reports have said that it wasn't like, you know, Andy Reid was not informed of the decision or anything like that. I mean, it seems pretty clear that at some point he might have said, you know, look, I'm happy to do a deal and resign, but this guy can't still be here. So it's bizarre. And it's a real shame, because the Chiefs, which have had this great stability for the last several years, they're now going into a GM search at kind of a weird point in the calendar. And no one really knows where it's going to go. The most likely candidate, it seems like, is an internal guy, Brett Veach, who has basically worked for nobody but Andy Reid for his entire career. And while I see that there could be some advantage to having a guy there who very much knows Andy Reid's schemes, the kind of players he likes, and they're going to work together well, I really hope that he's not going to become an Andy Reid puppet. Because we saw what happened in Philadelphia when Andy Reid basically had total control over both personnel and coaching. And he himself admitted that's basically what led to the collapse of the Philadelphia Eagles under his tenure. And so, you know, I worry about that. But at the same time, I'm not sure I really want an outside candidate who had nothing to do with the drafting of Patrick Mahomes, because that is going to be the main team building effort over the next couple of years. You traded up a lot to get the quarterback of the future. It is now your job to make that work, or at least give that experiment enough resources to potentially work. And to come in with a guy who has his own vision, or at least doesn't feel personally accountable to that decision at all, that would really worry me, that they're going to not be aligned in terms of what the plan should be over the next couple of years.
That was a very well-detailed response, but Neil has more questions for you.
Well, first of all, Nick, I would say, picture the scene. You're at Macklin's wedding. The reception's going on. Everyone's had a bit too much to drink. In the background, the disco music's playing, and Andy Reid's up there dancing to Tiffany. What is happening in that wedding? That wedding seems to be the fulcrum of all of this, isn't it? Something went down in that wedding. What was it?
That is possible. I mean, if someone gave fairly meager portions to Andy Reid's plate, I think, you know, that's really playing to your job security. But yeah, I mean, that's part of why this was so bizarre, is not only with Andy Reid at, you know, his wedding, and it's known that those guys are basically friends off the field, but Macklin actually forewent an entire honeymoon. He postponed his honeymoon so that he could be at OTAs, which, as a veteran, I mean, these guys don't really need to show up to these things anyway. But he said, like, nope, I'm not gonna go on a honeymoon. I'm gonna go to OTAs. I'm gonna actually play. And also, I mean, Macklin's been basically the mentor of that entire wide receiving core. Basically, during the summer, on the off season, all the wide receivers live at his house outside of Kansas City, where they, you know, they're practicing, you know, in between practices as well, back home and bonding and stuff. And so suddenly, like, the guy who is, you know, basically leading that whole group is like, oh, yep, sorry guys, I'm fired. You guys need a new place to stay. Bye. You know, it's been a pretty weird off season.
But are you trying to play this very difficult trick, Nick, of win now whilst building for the future?
Well, I think every team is trying to do that. I mean, or at least they should be. I know Pod hates the drafting of Patrick Mahomes, but while
worst move ever.
Well, the Patriots haven't needed to draft a quarterback high over the last 15 years. They've basically been doing some version of this very successfully over the last, you know, 20 or so. Of they know they're going to have some the veterans are going to become pricey. They know they're going to be drafting late, so you gotta use, basically, you're going to have to let some pricey veterans go, and you're going to have to use your draft capital in order to get those talented pieces. I mean, the Patriots trade like crazy around draft time. They use their picks on veterans usually, and they're kind of trying to keep a talented core of their team while moving forward and not killing themselves with the cap. And I mean, it is the cap that's also one of those, you know, things that's talked about as a reason why Dorsey may be out, is that the Chiefs have been, I wouldn't say they've been a terrible cap trouble, but they've been up against the cap basically every year that he's been here. And it's one of those things, like, it's different than having cap trouble like, you know, the Saints or the Raiders had in the past, where you can't afford to sign good players because you have no money. The Chiefs have no money because they have a lot of good players. But it is getting to the point now where, you know, there's going to be a lot of difficult decisions that have to be made while juggling both the future and the now.
Monty, go ahead and jump in, because your team recently had some front office, well, not front office moves, but they made a big deal with one of their star players, and seems like everything's hunky-dory with the Raiders of Las Vegas.
I mean, the only thing I would add to everything that Nick said is, I mean, he kind of touched on everything I'm hoping to happen. Whoever they bring in as a GM can either just be a yes man for Andy Reid, and we saw what happened in Philadelphia, or hopefully even like more entertaining to watch will be a GM that comes in and realizes that Mahomes is not the guy, and he and Andy Reid struggle to see which path they're going to take forward. Either way, it sounds like that's exactly what the sound of a window closing in Kansas City sounds like. So I don't think anyone could have said it better than what Nick did just right there. So as far as the Derek Carr deal goes, that's got to be the least surprising bit of news in the history of the NFL. I mean, I've saw some things on the television trying to compare, you know, who are the top 12 quarterbacks and where does Derek Carr even fit to be considered the highest paid guy, but that seems kind of silly. He's just the next guy up to get his deal done. So whoever signs right after him will then become the highest paid quarterback in the league. I actually, when I saw the numbers that came through, I thought Derek Carr had a lot more leverage and could have gotten some Ndamukong Suh guarantees. And there's no way the Raiders are going to cut him before this deal is over. They might as well have just guaranteed that whole contract. There's no way Derek Carr is going anywhere. They're going to move into Vegas. They need the Ankh at the helm. And I thought that Neil might have been the only one who was wondering whether or not that deal was going to get done. That just seems like a slow off season, and they're trying to find some kind of news. And Derek Carr signing the next highest contract in the league was not surprising at all.
So my question to you, as it relates to Neil, because he's got a quarterback looking for a similar type contract, did this contract take into account some of the things that we've mentioned before that seems to be holding up some of these other contracts from happening? The collective bargaining agreement, the suspected increase in salary cap, were all of those things taken into consideration with the Derek Carr contract?
The full guarantee, so I think our statistician, James, the Texan superfan, came through and said that the guarantees are only after 2 years, so they could get out of that deal after 2 years. I don't know if there's a player option in there or not, but I would think that it does. I mean, just, you know, kind of like the top guys in the game want to be able to renegotiate their contract every time that piece of the pie comes. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of a player option after year four, just so they can get back at the table. But the Derek Carr is never going anywhere. He's going to be a Raider for life. I mean, it doesn't really matter. So whatever money it takes to get him to stay there, that's what it'll be.
So Neil, does the contract that Derek Carr just signed make you feel more secure or less secure that Kirk Cousins is going to remain a Redskin for life?
Oh, it doesn't. I'm not sure it affects it at all for me, really. I'm not sure Cousins will be a Washington Redskin this time next year. I think he'll probably go at the end of the year, or they might put the non-exclusive franchise tag on him and see what the market is for him, truly. The thing with Carr's deal is that it looks good at the moment, but I thought he could have got more. I thought he would have been the first guy to really break $30 million a year guaranteed money. And let's face it, by the time Stafford's up next, he's going to get another whopping deal and become the highest paid quarterback. So I think Carr will be looking to rework that deal in a couple of years.
By all accounts, Carr, $25 million highest paid player doesn't sound like a team-friendly deal, but the way it was structured was so that they would have enough money under the cap to extend Gabe Jackson this year, and then all they're trying to do is get their money lined up so that they can give Khalil Mack a huge contract next year. So, I mean, if John Dorsey's one of the top GMs in the game right now, or was, since he currently is unemployed, I think Reggie McKenzie is doing a pretty killer job with his high draft picks that he needs to secure up for the next 5 years as well.
Greg, we haven't heard from you 30 minutes. Where is Big Ben in all of this? When's he up?
He's in year three of a five-year contract, and he's 35 years old, and he probably will not sign a contract since he's, you know, quote-unquote, considering retirement forever. So,
right, exactly. Neil, you wanted to jump in again.
Yeah, you guys will know far better than me on this one, but I kind of semi-follow the NBA a little bit, and obviously it's the free agency period just now, and there are guys I haven't heard of, and I know most of the NBA kind of decent players. There's guys I haven't heard of who are kind of eclipsing Carr's deal every day, and you're thinking, who are these guys? And what's happening to this billion-dollar America's biggest sports, massive franchise that the NFL is, and the players are earning a pittance compared to
the
NBA
roster
players.
Size.
Probably
NFL baseball. Teams have to pay 70 people. The basketball teams have what, 12 or 15 tops?
15, 19, 20 if they can get injured. But even then, I don't think that's right. If you look at the comparative incomes of both. Of both sports, I think the players are, you know, that CBA that was signed, 10 years ago or 5 years ago? What was it? That's turning out to be one of the worst deals players have ever made.
Their main point of contention was the number of practices they had to wear pads. I mean,
yeah,
if you had better leadership in the union focusing on, you know, the big picture, you might see different results.
Absolutely right, Monty.
I've never said that before. I'm also not convinced that better leadership exists currently in the NFL, but that's a whole nother story and one that we should be around to talk about for sure.
You reminded me of the Derek Carr deal too. So, I mean, I can sit here and say it was team friendly because it gave money for Gabe Jackson, but there's a huge consideration to the fact that the Las Vegas Raiders do not have state income tax. So it's also just, you know, gamesmanship where they're kind of structured the deal so that he gets more money once the Raiders move to Nevada and then he'll be able to keep more of it. So you can spin that story any way you like.
That is, of course, if he ends up moving and taking up residence in Las Vegas, because then he's got to pay the dual state tax for having the house in California. And it's whatever. That was a horrible joke that I tried to make. I should just edit it out, but I won't. the last item that I've seen since we've been doing our division previews, and I don't recall if David Harris was picked up and signed by the Patriots before or after we did the AFC East division preview. By the way, if you missed any of our division previews, you guys should be downloading and subscribing to the podcast, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, AHA Radio, anywhere great podcasts are heard. All eight divisions have been fully previewed by all of our super fans, including some special guests where we did not have super fans for the Lions, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Carolina Panthers. Very big ups and big thanks to the guests that joined us on those shows. But the David Harris pickup by the Patriots was such a Patriot move. First of all, the fact that he's a former Jet and the fact that he's awesome, and the fact that the Patriots needed depth at the linebacker position, it couldn't have been a more perfect Patriots story when that happened. And of course, it'll be fantastic to see David Harris whacking Patrick Mahomes late in the fourth quarter in the opener, Nick.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're not going to see Mahomes on the field in the opener. But also, isn't Harris a run stuffer anyway?
Hey, listen, it doesn't matter to me if he's a run stuffer or not. I was just simply trying to find a way to bring you back into the show because we've apparently found ways to ignore at least one of you guys for, you know, minutes at a time.
I will say, though, that, you know, I would have been fine with the Chiefs picking up David Harris. So, you know, congratulations. You got your you know, one of those underrated veteran signings that always seem to prop up Patriots for another season. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, and again, if we're going to compare front offices, this is what the Patriots do compared to what your team did in the NFL draft, which was the worst move ever in the history of the NFL. By the way, I wouldn't have had a problem with the Chiefs moving up to take a quarterback if it was like an Andrew Luck or even a Marcus Mariota type quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is neither of those types of quarterbacks. He's horrible.
So you're saying
he's
you would have been
awful.
Happier if the Chiefs traded four first round picks to get to like number one or number two, because that's what it would have cost to move all the way from like whatever 27 to one or two. But because
you get a real quarterback,
10,
yes. My point is there wasn't a real quarterback in this year's draft. My point is this was the 2013 quarterback draft all over again, and you traded up and paid a heavy price for a horror awful quarterback.
The one thing you could say, I mean, we don't know about the quarterback. He might be good, he might be rubbish, who knows. But one thing that maybe a little bit surprising was a team who were so close and have been so close to doing really well in the playoffs and possibly getting into the Super Bowl was you left a lot of good players on the board with that first round pick, Nick. That would be my only contention. If you wanted to win now, you know, that was the aim. Reuben Foster, for example, was on the board.
Yeah, Reuben Foster is the one that I'm going to keep an eye on from this draft class. And I think that's the best case you can make for the Chiefs should have stayed put and just drafted somebody for now. Because the Chiefs could use a strong inside linebacker that could, you know, potentially take up the reins for Derek Johnson when he's finally ready to hang him up, and also just to fight alongside him for the next couple of seasons. But, you know, Reuben Foster is also the guy that I've had like the most bust worries about this whole draft process. So I'm interested to see how he does, because I think that's going to be the most logical case against Mahomes you can make. And, you know, assuming that Mahomes isn't just straight horrible, which he, you know, might be, but we won't know that until a year or two from now.
And of course, you wouldn't have known when you made the trade that Foster would still have been available at your original pick.
This all feels like a smokescreen from Pod Vader, who's bearing the news that Tom Brady is pretty much announcing that he's ready to move on from football. He's released a book, The TB12 Method, the Tantric Sex Guide to How to Achieve a Lifetime of Sustained Peak Performance. So, I mean, he may have had a great run with the first ballot Hall of Famer, but it looks like he's ready to move on, Pod. So you and Nick better, you know, get on the same page here, because as your windows are both closing, you might want to, you know, help each other get through this difficult time.
Well, I mean, after the Patriots, you know, win this year's Super Bowl, then I'll be fine with Tom Brady moving on. But, oh, wait, that's right. We did mention that this was the postseason prediction show. So let's get to those here now. All right. Which conference shall we start with? Shall we start with the NFC or the AFC?
There's only one conference. I don't recognize the NFC. So,
all right. So, Neil, since you are the only NFC person here, we will hold the NFC until later. So, just to recap my win losses for the purposes of the standings in the playoffs, the Raiders will own the number one seed due to tiebreakers, and that tiebreaker is the head-to-head with the Patriots. The Raiders and Patriots, I both have at 13-3. This coming season, and the Raiders.
How did you get to that?
What do you mean? How did I get to that? How did I get the Raiders at 13-3?
You should have started off slow, Jay. You've just jumped straight in with a whole load of rubbish. I mean, goodness me.
Well, I see the Raiders losing at Denver. I see them losing at Kansas City, and I see them losing to the Dallas Cowboys. But otherwise, they have pretty clear sailing for the rest of those 13 games that I did not mention there.
We'll all get to enjoy watching them destroy Washington on Sunday Night Football. So, I mean, that'll be as clear after that game. It should be clear to Neil why it's so easy to come to that record.
I mean, they opened the season with Tennessee. That game could go either way. I could definitely see that. And I could see an at Washington game as an either way kind of game. I mean, there's always going to be a plus minus, but I mean, the other teams on their schedule are rubbish. And of course I gave them a split against Kansas City, although I'm sure Nick will remind me that Derek Carr, I don't believe Derek Carr has beaten the Chiefs yet. Has he?
His first career win. He was 0-10 his rookie year. The first win that he ever got was against Kansas City. So,
And lost all the rest since.
So that's how I got to 13-3 for the Raiders. If you'd like me to, the Patriots, I have losing. Let's see here. Oh, that's right. Well, I have them losing to the Raiders. That's a big loss. I have them losing at Miami. And there's one other loss on the schedule, and I'm not exactly sure which one it is. It is the Pittsburgh game. Yep.
I knew it.
So those are the three losses that I've got for New England. And by the way, I still do feel strongly the Patriots could have a 16-0 in them. But I did take the more pessimistic side. And as I mentioned, the tiebreaker head-to-head, Raiders gives Raiders take the number one slot.
13-3, that's pessimism at its finest, Jay.
That's right.
Worst case scenario.
That is the worst case scenario right there, 13-3 for New England. Even if Tom Brady gets injured and Jimmy Garoppolo has to come in and save them, 13-3. The third seed will be the Tennessee Titans, who will come in at 11-5, and they will beat the Pittsburgh Steelers based, I believe, on conference record. I think is how the Titans end up with the third seed over the 11-5 Steelers, who will be the fourth seed. The Chiefs actually will have the third best record in the conference, but unfortunately, since the Raiders won the division, will be a wild card team at 12-4. And the Jaguars, my boyfriends, I don't know how they snuck in, but yes, they sneak in with an 11-5 wild card team. Those are my AFC seeds. And I'm sure you all feel like Neil that they are rubbish. Except for Monty. Monty has no problem with my prediction whatsoever.
Yeah, it feels solid, Jay. I think you're doing a great job.
I'm pretty stunned about the Jaguars there. I mean, look, I get that they're kind of a sexy team with a few moves here and there, but they've been that team for like 3 or 4 years now. Me, they've let me down too many times. I have to get off that bandwagon.
See, I'm all in on the bandwagon this year, obviously, as they are my boyfriend.
But Jay, does that mean you're all in on Bortles, taking him to the playoffs?
I have to be.
That's what it is. Comes down
well,
to,
that's
isn't it,
the really? Thing. That's I understand that the Jaguars' hopes and dreams rely on the arm of Blake Bortles. And so Bortles has definitely got to step it up and not Bortles it like he does every year. For this to come through. And I don't know what necessarily is leading me other than my gut saying that I think this is finally it, that the Jaguars are going to make that turn. They do have a very favorable schedule in front of them, which certainly helps. But
would you also...
The Jaguars, of all the teams here, I feel least comfortable about the Jaguars in the playoffs.
You also then, did you say you had the Titans as a third seed and the Steelers as a fourth seed?
Yes, they'll have the same record at 11-5, but the Titans will have a better conference record, which will give them the third seed.
Okay, I probably would have flipped that. You know, what Greg, do you think Steelers will be a better record than the Titans?
Well, I think 11-5 is a good prediction, and Mike Tomlin always does lose conference games, so... You know, we dominate that first division, the NFC. They don't normally, they always lose a couple weak ones here in the AFC.
And Ben doesn't really try on the road, so you got to factor in a few road losses that you wouldn't normally expect.
We're not going to Oakland, so we're okay.
So the Jaguars will be at the Titans, and the Chiefs will be at the Steelers. For round one in the AFC, I have both visiting teams winning those games.
That's not happening.
Chiefs advancing and the Jaguars advancing. Greg has a problem with that.
I mean, Ben Roethlisberger at home in the playoffs. I mean, come on. That's all I have to say.
Didn't you say last year when it came around to the playoffs that you were kind of glad that the Steelers were going to Arrowhead because... The Steelers tend to crap the bed at home in the playoffs?
Well, I don't think I said that exactly. I think they normally crap the bed in AFC championship games at home. So I was excited about the prospects of going on the road for that. But.
Also, like, you know, the Big Ben in the playoffs against the Chiefs did not score a touchdown last year. So, yeah, I accept this result.
The Jaguars will move on to face the Raiders in Oakland. The Chiefs will head to Foxborough. And bad news for those wildcard teams, both the one and the two seed will advance in this scenario. Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, the Smith-Mahomes combo, just couldn't get by going on the road two times in a row there, Nick.
Well, Foxborough is where Alex Smith tends to end his playoff runs. That's true.
And the Jaguars going all the way to the West Coast, Monty, I don't see them advancing much past that.
Yeah, in this scenario, I would have a hard time picking them over Mariota just based on the two quarterbacks. And, you know, part of me just wants to see the Steelers to come out to Oakland. This is, you know, the good people of Oakland deserve a couple revenge games over the Steelers or the Jags in your scenario. And then bring Tom Brady to town.
Well, revenge will be sweet for you, Monty, because the fact that the game will go through Oakland and not through Foxborough is the difference. I have the Oakland Raiders of Las Vegas heading to Super Bowl 52.
I think the only way that it would be perfect is if the saga comes full circle, the Patriot dynasty that started on a blown call ends in Oakland on a clear fumble that, you know, you and Patrick get on the podcast and try to convince people is an incomplete pass, while the rest of the world satisfactorily cheers for the Raiders in January.
Well, the only thing that would make that even better is if Roger Goodell then said that the ball didn't have enough air pressure in it and had to then suspend the Patriots, even though it was a Raiders ball. That was the clear perpetrator in the whole scenario.
Did you have the Jaguars going to the Raiders in the playoffs, Jay? Was that your?
Yes, I did.
I kind of feel that could be a game that the Jaguars could actually win. I think that's a good matchup for them. If they can get that running game going with Fournette this season, and if that defense lives up to its, clearly it's the number of first-round picks and talent is on that defense, that's the sort of matchup I think the Raiders could struggle against.
All right, let's put down the cocktail here. It's a little early, I guess it's late for you. Go ahead. Please commence, sir.
Well, and just thinking, it's one of the reasons I think the Raiders might struggle to make the Super Bowl when the playoffs start is the fact that their defense will need to have a considerable improvement over last season's defense. Nothing wrong offensively, terrific offensively.
Well, that defense, which was awful last year, did win 12 games before Derek Carr got hurt and were poised to take the one seed last year. And on paper, it looks like they've, you know, attempted to fill a couple holes. So I think their defense is going to surprise you here, Neil.
But we'll see, Monty. You certainly won't be far away.
Before we move on to the NFC, the only other teams that I have that could sniff the playoffs in the AFC, the Broncos I have at a 9-7 record, and the Ravens I have at an 8-8 record. And if I'm going to consider that plus or minus two or three games for every team, then those two teams could possibly make it into the playoffs. Everybody else, I don't see a path for any of the other teams in the AFC. Greg, why don't we start with you? Do you see a chance for any other team perhaps in the playoffs?
Well, I think you're being a little bit you're overlooking the AFC South, because I literally think you can pick one or two teams out of a hat for that division, and they could substitute in for the Texans, or I'm sorry, not the Texans, but for the Titans. And I think you're right on the Ravens. I think everyone's sleeping on them. I mean, I know it's popular to tease Joe Flacco and everything, but he was coming off a major knee surgery, and they threw the ball the most last year. They gave him the least amount of help they've ever given him, with the least amount of like proven weapons last year. So I'm, you know, quietly optimistic about the Ravens, as much as I hate to say that.
How about you, Nick?
I mean, I think like the dark horses there would be the Bengals and possibly the Chargers. I don't see the Chargers doing it, but they're kind of they always somehow rise into this discussion. And I will say, like, if they can keep themselves from, you know, just like massive injuries, there's no reason why they can't compete for a wild card in the AFC West, at least. I mean, it's going to be tough for them to win that division, but I think they're going to be at least in the conversation late in the season. Outside of them in the AFC, I don't know. I'm sure our Dolphins superfan wants to get a shout out to the Dolphins of, you know, being in the shot for the wild card.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't like any of the AFC East teams. Other than the Patriots, I have the Dolphins and Bills both at 4-12, and the Jets, of course, going 0-16.
You guys are completely discounting all the moves that the Cleveland Browns made this offseason. I will say, though, for a Dolphins super fan, I was surprised that the Dolphins won 10 games last year. So, I mean, for them to go from the 10-win season down to 4 seems like a bit of a stretch. I bet you they'll be in the mix at the end.
Oh, I mean, they have a tougher record this season, and facing quite a number of the teams that we have represented here on the show, plus that Tennessee team is on their schedule as well. Neil, you mentioned the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Greg. I think the AFC South is one division where anybody could come out. The Texans got into the playoffs with very poor quarterback play last season, didn't they? And they're quite likely to have very poor quarterback play this season. They could easily win that division. But I wouldn't agree with Greg on the Baltimore Ravens. They're 6-10 for me.
That's just your DC hate of the Baltimore region.
Baltimore Ravens, clearly.
I guess the only other storyline that I would discuss in the AFC, the Bengals, I have at, I have them at 6-10. Would we see a head coaching change finally in Cincinnati if they don't make the playoffs and they have a losing record?
I don't think so. I think they're in the middle of a quiet rebuild. And I know they didn't address the offensive line. They lost their two best offensive linemen, but they did have planning there in the future and earlier than past for the future. They did draft two tackles, I think it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting that they haven't panned out yet. They're still young players. So I think they are just one of those teams that hoping to probably go about 8-8 this year for their rebuild purposes.
Potential landing spot for Jeff Fisher?
Oh, boy. Why would you wish a team such a horrible, horrible thing?
I just heard 8-8, and I just, knee-jerk reaction.
All right, let's move on now to the NFC teams. Neil, I've got bad news for you, because I do not see the Washington Redskins in the six teams here that I have seated. I have them on the outside looking in at a lovely 10-6, which is a shame, I suppose, for your team. But the number one seed will go to the Green Bay Packers. The number two seed will go to the Arizona Cardinals. I mentioned on the NFC West preview that perhaps I had not learned my lessons from last season when it came to the NFC West and specifically the Arizona Cardinals. But I do think the Cardinals, when we're talking about teams people are sleeping on, I don't think the Cardinals are as bad as their record indicated they were last season. I think they're a much better team than that.
Well, in terms of Washington, Jay, first thing I would say is that I like Washington in the offseason with the free agency and the draft and all the rest of it. It's when we start playing games. I really hate football because it's so bad, aren't they? You know, you're right. But I don't get your Cardinals love at all. What makes you think the Cardinals are a better team than the record showed last year? I thought the record was fine last year, and I'm not as high on the Cardinals at all. I don't see how they're going to get to a playoff spot.
I think their offense can perform better. They have the right pieces in place, I believe, on that offense. And I do believe
really?
That I do. I think a lot of their problems are on the defensive side of the ball, where a lot of their key players keep getting injured. And so really it's a matter of health. If their defense, and I know there's ifs and buts, and we know how big those words tend to be, but if their defense can remain healthy, I think they've got a real shot of maintaining a superior record to the other teams in the NFC.
I think they lost their best defender last in the offseason with Campbell leaving. He went to, where did he go now? Jacksonville, Calais Campbell. I don't know, Jay. I just don't see it. I don't see enough. I don't see enough on defense, and offensive line as well is a worry for me.
You just put a lot of faith on Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I don't think their defense is going to be. Hugely better than it was last year. And the other big problem last year was Carson Palmer. I mean, he's really getting into Peyton Manning land in terms of just being a very, very aged and hampered by age quarterback. I mean, they're basically their entire offense last year was David Johnson, and they're going to keep doing that. And look, I mean, I think as long as Carson Palmer, who's now going to be a year older and a year worse, I think their only real hope would be to follow sort of the Broncos model, but I don't think that defense is nearly strong enough to attempt that.
I don't know. They do have the real American, which I think will give them a good leg up. In any case, I have the Cardinals at 12-4. I had the Packers at 13-3, which by the way, I think is a little bit optimistic for the Green Bay Packers. But the rest of the teams that will be featured all went 11-5 in my win-loss predictions. The Falcons and the Cowboys. Falcons get the third seed. Cowboys the fourth seed. The Seahawks and the Panthers will round it out with the wild card, with the two wild cards. Seahawks in the fifth seed. Panthers sixth seed. So the first round is the Falcons hosting the Panthers and the Cowboys hosting the Seahawks. So there are a lot of, I mean, the Panthers are a team, and we discussed this in the NFC South, where a lot is riding on their quarterback in Cam Newton.
Boy, Jay, this is Monty. I just don't see the Panthers getting anywhere near to what they were when they made a run for the Super Bowl. I mean, even in that division, I think they're going to have trouble keeping pace with the Buccaneers. I think their defense is a lot better than you think. You just haven't really seen very many Buccaneer games. I just don't see Cam Newton leading that team back to the playoffs anytime soon, unless I'm crazy.
I agree with Monty there. I think the Panthers have the biggest question marks this offseason. They're kind of changing the structure of their offense, it appears, with McCaffrey and Samuels, the other kind of flex running back they got. And their offensive line was a mess last year without Michael Orr, and he still has a bad back. And they brought in, you know, a Vikings offensive lineman. You know, that is never a good line to lead with.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
absolutely. Sorry, Nick, when you go.
I was just going to say, I mean, on restructuring the offense, you know, and with that new personnel they're bringing in, I mean, it's not just restructuring the offense, it's trying to restructure, like, the mind of Cam Newton, because their whole offense has been based around both his deep passing ability, which is very good, and his running ability, but they overused him in that last year. He was constantly injured, and partially because their offensive line was so bad, but they had more designed runs by Florida than any other team, and he was getting bashed up. So now they have these, like, kind of short, kind of twitch backs that he can throw to and try to get them into space and things like that. But you're taking Cam Newton and you're going to try to reinvent the offense, so you're going to play him as like Sam Bradford or Alex Smith. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, his short accuracy actually isn't that good, and it's just not the way to play that really accents his unique skills. I mean, it's just I'll be fascinated if it works, but I don't have high hopes for it.
I will just say that if I take the Panthers out, then we're looking at the Redskins, perhaps the Vikings or the Buccaneers, as you guys mentioned earlier. Both of those teams I have, Vikings and Bucks, I have at 9-7, or the Saints at 8-8. So those would be the four other teams that I've got.
Wait a second. I think your big blue bias is peeking its ugly head here. The New York Giants won 11 games last year, and they did make some pretty good moves this offseason. To have them sub 8-8, that just feels like, you know, those Super Bowls you don't remember just subconsciously are creeping into your pick on.
Yeah, I have them at 7-9. With the Eagles actually ahead of them at 8-8. So I have the Giants at the bottom of the NFC East.
That doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Neil?
Feels good, but it doesn't feel right.
That is what Tom Brady's book should be called.
So I do have, ultimately, it doesn't matter for the wild card teams, because I have both the Falcons and the Cowboys winning those games. And I don't think, I mean, the Falcons being the third seed, so you're looking at the Redskins or the Giants or any of those other teams that I mentioned filling in at the sixth seed. I don't see the Falcons losing at home, especially in their new home, in the first round of the playoffs.
Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah, well, maybe. The Packers will then host the Cowboys. The Cardinals would then host the Falcons. And that's where I have the Falcons continuing their winning ways and the Packers winning in Lambeau in January against the Dallas Cowboys. Neil?
Yeah, fine with that.
The Packers, being the one seed, continue to have that nice home field advantage, and the Falcons being a dome team outside in January, the Packers will move on to Super Bowl 52.
No.
It's a great way to put it. No.
Yeah. Sorry, I do still believe the Falcons, and okay, you got the Super Bowl hangover potentially, but I do think the Falcons remain the class of the NFC this year. I don't see the other teams have made us enough steps to close on the Falcons. I think they're still the best team.
I think the Packers win that one on a Hail Mary.
All right, so here it comes, Monty. It's the Packers and the Raiders in Super Bowl 52. And much to your delight and Nick's discomfort, the Raiders will be the winners holding the Lombardi Trophy.
I mean, I just think that's such an obvious pick. The Raiders are clearly the class of the NFL. The only thing that I would add is that, you know, for this to be the perfect storybook ending to the Oakland Raiders, the Seahawks are going to have to get to the Super Bowl and it come down to a first and goal from the 1 yard line. Do the Raiders give it to Marshawn Lynch or do they call a pass? We're going to have to wait until February to see. And, you know, that's the only way this is going to end, really.
Greg, I know you got to get running. You have any thoughts on a potential Super Bowl matchup?
Well, since nobody likes this team, I'll go with them. I'll say my prediction from last year exactly. It's out on a limb like it was last year, but it's the Cowboys and the Bengals. And maybe that's a little bit because I just don't want to pick the Steelers. So.
Interesting. So so the Bengals, who we just talked about, not even making the playoffs with a losing record, you've got them in the Super Bowl.
Why not? I mean, we talked the same way about the Cowboys last year, and they made a run. So,
Monty, I know you're crushed for time, too. Your Super Bowl, other than obviously you like the Raiders. Who's the team you have them looking at?
All jokes aside, I do like the Seahawks. It might be because I'm just Cam Chancellor is one of my favorite players, and I think Earl Thomas was a big loss last year. They were right in the thick of it up until that injury. So I do think that the Seahawks have just as good a chance as anyone in the NFC, but nothing would make me happier than for the Raiders to bring home a Lombardi for the good people of Oakland, California.
Nick, who you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think the AFC just seems like the top teams there are going to stay the top teams there, and you can kind of mix and match them once you get to the playoffs. The NFC, I just have a feeling that it's going to be a team that's, you know, totally out of right field, which tends to happen in the AFC, NFC side, rather. You know, no one expected the Falcons to make the run last year. No one expected the Panthers the year before. I'm going to throw out there something weird. I think it's going to be maybe – we'll just give it to the Cowboys.
Neil, clearly you don't like the Cowboys.
No, I don't like the Cowboys at all. But on a serious note, I don't think they'll make the Super Bowl. I'll take the Falcons from the NFC. And, yeah, my one concern with the Patriots, Jay, who will be, of course, the favorites to be back in the Super Bowl, my one concern with them is I'm not sure when teams try and load up on veteran players to make a win now push for another Super Bowl. I'm not sure that often pays off in the end. So I think there'll be a little bit of a faltering season for the Patriots, and I'll go with the Raiders then in the Super Bowl. Raiders and Falcons. Falcons win.
I will say this about the Patriots. If the Patriots somehow find a way to go 16-0 in the regular season, I believe that they will be the Lombardi champions at the end, that they've learned from the mistake of that 2007 season. There's been a lot of comparisons to this Patriots team to that 2007 team with Randy Moss. I will say if the Patriots even lose one game in the regular season, they will not be in the Super Bowl. So I will go even that far to say that the Patriots cracks will completely separate. I do think that if there is any team that can load up with veteran guys and make that push for a Super Bowl, it is the Patriots. They did it the first time around, and I don't see why they couldn't do it this time around.
Well, it's kind of irrelevant because you guys are going to start out 0-1, so.
I am really curious to see how Brandon Cooks fares up in New England, because nobody is better than Bill Belichick at, you know, scouting veteran players. And for Sean Payton to just get rid of an up-and-coming young wide receiver, you have to wonder, did he know something that we don't? Or is Brandon Cooks going to just go right into the fold in the New England Patriots way, buy Tom Brady's new book, and, you know, just be a happy camper? And that's something that's really curious to me. I'd love to see how that plays out.
Well, I know from the Saints' perspective that Cooks was not very happy with the way that the ball was being distributed down there. And he had now a lot of his up and downs last could probably be pointed right directly to him, because he apparently only knows one route, and that's go deep and go fast.
It's not like there's a lot of mouths to feed in New England or anything. I'm sure he should see 150 targets.
Yeah, but there is a difference between a team that is coming off a Super Bowl and has the greatest of all time at quarterback, and a team that, you know, has been there once and hasn't really sniffed it since that once. And the fact that they're super high on Michael Thomas down in New Orleans, like probably unreasonably so.
We'll see. I got a feeling that there's something up with Cooks. Otherwise, they wouldn't have dumped him before they even had to worry about his rookie contract.
Neil?
Yeah, Jay, I wonder, am I right in saying that you've won two of the last three Super Bowls, and that's been since the Deflategate issue? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So are you now on this podcast willing to say that you're glad for the Deflategate issue, which has kept the fire burning in the Patriots organization to keep winning?
No, but it was a nice added addition for sure. Thanks for giving us something to keep us motivated. That it was nice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice of Roger Goodell. So there you go. There's our thoughts, or more specifically, my thoughts, I suppose, with the super fans chiming in and telling me I'm wrong. So I want you to tell me I'm wrong. NextFanUp@gmail.com is the email address. @NFU Podcast is our Twitter, and Facebook.com/NFU Podcast is the way to reach us on Facebook. There are quite a number of announcements here that have also occurred over the last month. One, it's podcast awards time. So if you wouldn't mind going to podcastawards.com and nominating our fine show for a podcast award, we would be very grateful for you. And if you follow us on all of those social media platforms, then you already know that we've been asking you to do that for us over the last couple of weeks. Secondly, I have been asked to become a contributor to Musket Fire on Fansided. So the Musket Fire blog, part of the Fansided network, I will now be contributing articles to them, talking about my beloved New England Patriots.
Is that muskets? Is that muskets or is that muskrats?
I often do trip up and say muskrat, but it is musket. The old revolutionary gun that we used to forge our independence from the United Kingdom.
Hey.
Yes. and then lastly, we will be one of the podcasts that will be featured in the Two Pods a Day campaign that will be happening during the month of August. So we're very excited to be a part of that campaign, and we'll be excited to be telling you about some of the other podcasts that will be featured in that same campaign right here on our podcast. So lots of good things happening here for the next Fan Up show. And as I said, we're just getting into the preseason. We're getting into preseason form. So we'll be back every Thursday, every Monday with new shows talking about the game that we all love, the NFL. And I guess that's pretty much all I got left to say. Anybody else have any final words here? No? All right, then. With that, here comes Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.